Yo, this is P-Town's finest, representing the NEP, D. Stoudemire, and y'all know what we're talking about. No one's ready to deal with us.
Hello, boys and girls, and welcome to another edition of the Rip City Reports. I am Joe Freeman of the Oregonian. He is Casey Holdall of Trailblazers.com.
Greetings, everybody.
Hi, and, Casey.
Hi, Joe.
How are you? Good to be back home.
We're actually living in a, or I'm actually back in town.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, we made it.
It was a long haul. Somebody has to do it.
It was.
16 of 17 days away from this beautiful, fine city.
Yep.
8 of 9 games. 3 back-to-backs?
Two
home and road and home. Was there one on the road? I think there was one on the road. Chicago,
yeah.
Milwaukee?
Yeah. No, that wasn't it, but
it was on
there.
Trip,
there was
though.
Some back-to-back at some point in time there. Yeah.
Yeah. Indy maybe? Indy and someone?
Indy Memphis.
Indy Memphis.
Yeah.
There it is. Well, you survived. We all lived to
It wasn't Indy Memphis. It was Milwaukee Memphis just for posterity.
Close enough.
Yeah. Exactly.
Memphis was involved.
Cities. Not in the Western time zone.
Happy early Christmas to you, Casey.
To you too, Joe.
And to all of our fellow listeners who celebrate the holiday.
Christmas celebrators, yeah. Everyone who doesn't, happy holidays and whatever holiday you might celebrate or no holidays for my Jehovah's Witnesses out there. So,
sure.
And other religions, other, obviously. Don't
whatever you do or don't
Christmas.
Do, happy that to you.
Yeah.
How about that?
Yeah. So when I got asked that on the radio the other day if I cared about Happy Holidays or Merry Christmas. And I was like, of course not. Like,
yeah.
I celebrate Christmas, but I'm not a Christian. So it's a gift-giving holiday to me. So, which, I mean, and again, that's such a weird thing to get bent out of shape about in Casey's opinion.
Yeah, I mean, everybody has their own thing. I mean, I guess if I didn't celebrate Christmas and everybody always wished me a Merry Christmas.
Well,
but
I
think the sentiment more than anything.
People are being nice. I guess I can understand people getting pissed off from that perspective. I mean, I wouldn't agree with it.
Yeah.
But that's not really the one it's typically the other way.
Oh,
it's
really?
People who celebrate Christmas who don't like to hear happy holidays.
Oh, the quote-unquote war on Christmas.
I don't even know why I'm going down this road. I don't know. I was asked about it on the radio yesterday, so
it just came up
in my mind. Yeah.
You can wish me whatever you want to wish me.
Me too. That's what I said. I was like, hey, if you say anything nice to me, I'll be like, yeah, thank you. I appreciate that.
Not very many nice things to say about the Blazers these days, Casey.
No.
Who have lost 4 in a row and 8 of 9, and are a very disappointing 13-18, 31 games into the season. Here we are almost at Christmas, and the Blazers find themselves tied for 8th in the standings, in the Western Conference standings, with, hold your breath, the Denver Nuggets and the Sacramento Kings.
Two teams that the Blazers have recently lost to.
Indeed.
In different fashions. One in blowout fashion and one in come-from-behind loss fashion. So
I feel like you can't simulate this via podcast, but I feel like we should be sitting at some chair or couch, and we should have something resembling the Rip City Report listeners lying on a couch as if they're in therapy or something. Although,
sure.
Really, I don't think that's true. I think most people just sit down when they're
When I used
counseling.
To go to therapy, I just sat in a chair.
Yeah, me too.
He did have a
the
couch,
option. Yeah,
but I think I even asked him once. I was like, "So what?
What's the protocol
sits on the couch?"
Here? Yeah,
it's like, are you like, hey, does it depend on like your level of care that you need? Like, well, you're in a real bad way, so you just lay on the couch, or you're just kind of on the edge of sanity. You can sit in the chair. So,
and what was the answer?
I don't recall. I would ask a lot of questions about the profession. And he was never really interested in answering them. He always wanted to bring it back to what my issues were.
He's like, I'm not going to let you deflect.
Yeah,
there's
exactly.
No deflecting here.
Like, yeah, so, how do you decide this waiting room out here? You know, like, how does that work?
How does that
he
work?
He's like, yeah, let's.
How do you pick the wall colors?
Let's get back to your crippling depression, Casey.
Well, let's get to news and notes here in a second. First, if you are on the Twitter sphere, if that's a word, you can follow us on Twitter at Chold for Casey, at Chold, and at Blazer Freeman for me. And also, if you're a fan, you want to access our fine content, please check out blazers.com/forwardcenter for Casey's stuff, and you can access mine and my colleague's stuff at organlive.com/blazers. And for those of you who subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, we do indeed appreciate it. why don't you give us a Christmas present and give us a review?
Yeah, or a holiday present, if you
or
will.
A holiday yeah. present, yes.
Kwanzaa present.
Kwanzaa, Hanukkah, Festivus,
Ramadan,
whatever.
Festivus. Yeah. Yeah.
Whatever
whole,
you implied. It's free.
Shebang. Yeah, exactly.
It doesn't even cost anything.
No. Wouldn't that be something if you had to pay to leave reviews?
Oh, no one would leave reviews?
I mean, you'd probably get... You would only get really bad reviews is what it would be.
Right.
It'd be like, I am so mad, I'm willing to pay to put these people
right.
on
That's
blast.
True. That's true. So, yeah.
I mean, people love leaving bad reviews anyway, so. Not on our podcast, of course. You
no,
guys
not
are
on
great,
ours.
But and as always, we take all of your reviews seriously and try to apply your suggestions to making the podcast better.
Indeed. And we whined profusely last podcast because we hadn't gotten reviews in a while, and then we did get a few reviews since then.
Oh,
so
nice.
Thank you very much.
I can't really parse out my whining from one day to the next, so to say that I whined a lot the
Just
last
another
time
day.
We did it, yeah, I mean, that could be in anything, Joe.
It could be any day, any city, anywhere,
any topic, any universe, any space-time continuum, any dimension. I'm probably there complaining about something.
There you go. Speaking of... Oh, no, I'm not even going to do it. I was going to go to Westworld, but that would be rude to our listeners who hasn't watched it. So we'll go right to news and
notes.
I got
no complaints about Westworld, though.
No, it was fantastic.
I
was doing
up,
on the dimensions
happy.
And that
yeah,
sort
gotcha.
Of thing.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know what you're saying.
Yeah,
you
feel me. And there's people out there nodding their heads right now, too, like we are. But there's some people who are like, will you guys shut up and get to Blazers? So here we go. The Blazers suffered a 96-95 loss to the Dallas Mavericks Wednesday night at the Moda Center. It was their fourth loss in a row and eighth in the last nine games. The Mavs entered the game tied for the worst record in the NBA. Al-Farouq Aminu, who had missed five of the previous six games with a back contusion, returned to the starting lineup versus Dallas. He finished with 8 points and eight rebounds, played nearly 30 minutes.
Did he really?
Mm-hmm.
Man, that was...
29 and chain. 29-41, I think.
I mean, not that anyone really distinguished themselves last night, but I remember thinking, like, boy, Farouk hasn't really played a lot. But yeah, if he played 30 minutes and got eight and eight, he did.
Meanwhile, Evan Turner missed his second game in a row with a sprained left ankle. Turner suffered the injury during a Sunday practice in Sacramento when he stepped on a teammate's foot. He was wearing a walking boot for a couple days there, so it's possible he could be out for a while, although we don't have any timeline or anything like that. But my instincts in history tell me that if it's a sprained ankle that's bad enough to relegate you to a walking boot for any length of time, it might sideline you for a bit.
Yeah. Which, and by the way, too, I had a couple people mention, like, oh, he stepped on someone's foot. What's the big deal? It's like, that's a very common way to sprain your ankle in the NBA.
Perhaps the most common.
Yeah, well, and I think it is. And I even mentioned to one person on Twitter, I was like, there's even a rule about it. You have to allow people room to land because guys step on people's feet and they roll their ankles. So you got to figure, too, you know, like a guy who's 6'10", you know, like his foot is probably, you know, like a half a foot in width.
Certainly
tall.
Longer.
Yeah, so, I mean, That's a long way to go when you're rolling your ankles.
It's
so.
And what you're talking about, if you like, one of the worst for me as someone who pretends to be a player is that if you take a shot and then and someone goes to contest the shot and they happen to get in your space and you come down naturally and then you roll your ankle. Oh my God, that is the worst. Mm. And you can just the visual of a foot coming down off the ground, hitting someone else's foot, and then rolling to the
Well, brutal. It's good, and also too, like when you're coming down, your body's like, or you feel like you're going to come down flat. So like there is any kind of, you know, terrain there, it really like, you know, it's like
your equilibrium,
like when you take that step, that step's not there, you know, it's like, and then your ankle is rolled.
It always, when I think about stuff like this, makes Andre Miller all the more incredible because some of the ankle rolls and little, well, I say little bumps and bruises, but they would have been huge. It would have put me out 2 weeks. He just gets right back up or goes to the bench, sits down for 5 minutes, comes back out and plays. I don't know if his body was just tougher than most people or more durable or he was just, whatever it was incredible that he played as many games as a row as he did.
I obviously don't know what the
medical
physics
term?
Or the, you know, kinesiology of it is, but I'm wondering if, you know, if you're an athlete, like, do those tendons loosen up a bit at some point in time to where, like, when you roll something so often...
Has a little more give.
Yeah, exactly. But I know that's also a problem, too, because when something does have, you know, when those tendons are too loose, like, that's when guys continue to roll their ankles over and over again. So,
can you imagine Andre Miller as a part of the Blazers' new like training and strength and performance staff with
Andre
with all
Miller
the preventative...
having to do that quick jump thing after practice?
He would look
now.
At them like, "Are you kidding?"
Yeah,
I mean, this was a dude who rolled in into training camp in the summer and actually used training camp to get into shape. He was not out there working in the summer, and it's just
hot,
not
hot
how
dog,
he rolled.
Hot dogs and roller skating.
Yeah,
that was Andre Miller in the summertime.
Best visual I have of him is him skating down the East Bank Esplanade, and I didn't even see it, but someone told me about it, and it sounded fun. Yeah. Sounded like a romantic comedy, like an opening scene of a romantic comedy.
Sure. My favorite is Sean Mager, your
coworker,
and my former coworker took a photo of Andre Miller. I think it was at the Hoop Summit a couple years back. And he's sitting courtside, and he's eating like a plate of nachos, and he's using his sweatshirt to wipe his mouth off. It's just like, yep, yeah, that's about
so
right.
Dry.
And you know, it's like one of those like over patterned sweatshirts too, if I'm not mistaken. So, yeah, it's better times, I guess.
One of my favorite Andre Miller stories is there was a post game interview, and I think it was our good friend Jason Quick who did the interview at the time we worked together, and he was asking about Jared Bayless, and through the interview, Andre said Gerald Bayless, or at least we were pretty sure. And so Quick was just giddy at the prospect that he thought that Jared Bayless's name was Gerald Bayless. So he immediately comes to me after the interview. He's like, "Joe, you got to listen to this." And he replays his tape. And so both of our heads are, you know, squeezed tightly to this tiny little microphone or whatever speaker, and it sure sounded like he said Gerald. And so for at least a year we would refer to Jared as Gerald Bayless.
Absolutely. Which I've referenced the other day when we were in Chicago. We were interviewing Al-Farouq Aminu because he had played in that game. That was the game he had come back from his calf sprain. And I had gone to practice the day before and talked to Farouq about coming back. And then, you know, he was referencing that conversation when he was talking to you, I, and Quick. But then I could tell that he forgot what my name was, if he ever knew what it was. And so he was like, "Yeah, as I was saying to this guy here." I was like, "Yep, that sounds about right."
I forgot about that already. That was pretty good.
No, I didn't even mention it. I was like, that was my Gerald Bayless moment.
So later on, it was just shortly before Andre Miller departed us via trade. I think it was Quick. One of us asked Andre just straight up, "What's Bayless's first name?" And he kind of had this goofy grin on his face, and he was like, "Jared?" He was like, it turns out he did know that his name was Jared, but it will always be Gerald Bayless to me. Okay, last news and note. See what we've done here, Blazers fans? We've already sidetracked you from thinking about the depression that is your team, and now you're probably smirking or giggling.
Yeah, thinking about past teams.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You feel good already. That couch, this is a very nice therapeutic session for you. It's coming
absolutely.
In handy. Absolutely. On to less positive news. In more long-term injury news, it looks more and more like Festus Ezeli will not play for the Blazers this season. The backup center said last week that he hasn't officially decided to undergo season-ending surgery on his left knee, but acknowledged that he's plagued by pain and needs to come up with a permanent resolution. It seems like he's pretty soon going to decide that he needs to do something more long-term to fix that knee. So I wouldn't bank on any defensive improvement or anything at all from Festus this season if I were a Blazers fan. And finally, looking ahead, the Blazers will play their next three games at home. They face the Spurs and your LaMarcus Aldridge on Friday. They play the Raptors, one of the best teams in the Eastern Conference, on Monday after Christmas. And then they face the Sacramento Kings at home on Wednesday before they go out for another road trip right around the new year. So there you go. There's your news and notes.
Yeah.
So should we move on to the nitty-gritty here?
Yeah, let's do it.
My first topic just says, "What the hell?" question mark.
Yeah.
I think that's on the minds of most Blazers fans right now, rightfully so. This is obviously, at this point, their lowest. They've reached the lowest moment of the season, not just that they're losing, but how they're losing, who they're losing to. Each game, it's a different form of misery, from a 45-point spanking versus the Golden State Warriors to a home loss to the worst team in the NBA, to a wild and crazy mouthpiece spitting weird rivalry meltdown at the Kings. And you go on and on down the list. Obviously, their defense is the main culprit, but it is a variety of things. And really, right now, even talking to the players and coaches, you get the impression, and it, I guess it's kind of obvious, but something's just missing. That magic that they had last year is just not there. That feeling, that confidence, that indescribable kind of aura that surrounds them is nowhere to be found. And I think more than anything, this team is just trying. They're searching and hoping that they can rediscover that, and they're having trouble finding it.
Yeah, whatever they had last year seems to be gone now. Even whatever they had at the beginning of the season this year, you talk about it being a different thing every night. I mean, that is true, but it's always the main issue is that they cannot stop anybody right now. I mean, like, literally on a possession basis, teams have to be shooting better than 50% against them from the field, at least during this kind of last 2-3 week stretch they've been on. Teams are scoring 30 points per quarter with regularity. I mean, what they lost to the Kings after scoring, what they finished with 121 points and they lost by 5.
They gave up 62 first half points to the Dallas Mavericks, who have the worst offense NBA.
Their loss to the Warriors was their biggest deficit ever to the Warriors, 45 points in a game that could have actually been worse had either team played their players in the fourth quarter. It's the defense is not there. I don't know how they go about addressing it at this point, because I'm assuming, because it's been a persistent issue. So the idea that, like, there's something that they can try that they haven't tried yet, short of a complete and total overhaul, I don't know.
Do you think that Aminu's going to, I mean, he's going to help, but how much more can he help? Because he's missed the majority of their games over the last, let's say, month. I mean, he missed what, 12 or 13 for the strain, and he's missed 5 or 6 for the back. So he's missed the majority of their games during this run. I don't think when you look at Aminu as an individual player, you think that dude is a really, really, really good player and that, you know, he's going to be a difference. But he seems to be almost not the missing link, but a huge, almost perhaps the most important defensive link for this team. I mean, do you think that his return will?
Yeah, I do. But the issue is that they're so bad defensively right now that
it's not one
throwing
thing.
Al Farouk out there is not. I mean, like, that can't change it that much, because I mean they're really at the point right now where it's like, if you pass the ball 3 times against the Blazers on defense, there is a decent chance you're going to get a good shot. I mean, we saw last night against the Mavs, there were multiple occasions where guys were just uncovered on the 3-point line. And Blazers got lucky a bit. And you know, they've had some, I mean, won't call it bad luck, but, you know, some people would say that, at least in terms of opponent 3-point percentage, that it's just kind of luck, you know, like it some of it is obviously defensive. And I think when you're as bad defensively as the Blazers are right now, it is defense, and they're not connected. Like, there's rotations on defense look like it's almost pure happenstance at this point. You know, like, it's like if a guy is in the right spot when the ball gets rotated around to the guy he's supposed to be defending, super. If not, well, okay. So, I mean, they're so bad defensively right now that it's hard to even talk about. Like, I don't know how you even kind of encapsulate it other than to say that it's just bad.
I keep going back and forth because my eyes tell me that there's no solution ahead, and that this is what this team is, and they're going to be who they are moving forward, and that's this. The only thing that gives me hesitation is what we saw last year. And I know that that's what Terry's banking on, which I think in a lot of ways is a hope and a prayer. But it gives me pause, because what I learned last year is that you can make improvement, you know, over the course of a year, and dramatic improvement, and you can sort of turn things around in a hurry.
You can.
And two more points to that is their December schedule has been brutal, and we've talked about this before. I wrote about it before it happened. And this happened last year, and they were at this point last year. They were 11-20, and you saw what they did last year. So that's in the back of my mind where, you know, usually around Christmas, you know what a team is. That's sort of the benchmark in the NBA.
Yep.
But, that, you know, because of last year, I have a little bit of hesitation making that definitive statement now. But on the flip side, again, my eyes tell me what I see, and it's hard to ignore that. Also, because of the expectations of this team and where their confidence was going into the year, like, that's a pretty volatile or at least a shaky thing in the league. Like, you can have that, and then you can lose it in a hurry.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder if the way things are going and how badly they're trending, if a team like this can lose its confidence permanently. Or they can go through such a rough stretch that they can have a hard time rediscovering the confidence or the magic or whatever you want to call it that helped them be so great before. And so I just, if I'm a Blazers fan, I'm worried that if things spiral too far, then there will be too big of a hole to dig out
of. Sure. And I think as of right now, they still have what I think keeps them from getting to that headspace just yet is what they did last year and where they were at last year. Mm-hmm. And I think right now they can still say, hey, our record isn't as bad as it was this time last year. I mean, I think you could argue even that they were playing better last year. They were losing some close games. You know, they were giving up some leads to better teams. That's not what is happening right now. Right now, they can't stop anyone, and that's a much worse problem to have than just, you know, not executing well late in games. But you can still say, hey, you know, we did this last year, guys. We had hard times, too. There were times where people thought we were awful, and then we were able to come back and get it straightened out. So I think as of right now, that's kind of what they're hanging all their hopes on right now, at least in terms of that confidence. But that only will last for, you know, another month maybe, and then you get into January, and if you're still playing like, well, I mean, if they're playing like this for another 2 weeks, they might already be out of it, because I mean, the way they're playing right now, they would have to be the dog in every single game, because I mean, when you can't stop anyone, you can't win.
The only thing that saves them right now is that they're 13-18, and they're still eighth in the West.
Yeah,
because
absolutely.
I think the top seven is pretty solid, and that eighth spot is, I mean, it's right there for the Blazers. They're
sure.
The best on paper, and in what we've seen, you know, based on last year, they're the best team of that group. But what we've seen so far over the last month, in particular, then it's what you say. Then they could be sunk. So, but you know, I've said this before, I think about a month ago on the podcast when they had their first kind of slide. It's like, is this team what we've seen? Are they kind of just a mediocre 40-45 win team that had an incredible run last year over the last 2 months of the season and beat a hobbled Clippers team that all made them look better than they were? Or are they a team that's young and growing, and this is just, you know, what we'll look back on and say this is the lowest point of the season, or maybe the next 2 weeks too? But that's the question of moving forward of this season: is who is what really is this team? Who really are they?
And sure. I guess my counter to that would be that they would be happy to be the team they were last year. Right now, I think, you know, it's again, that team at least seemed like they. You know, Terry last night talking about not playing with enough emotion or passion, like that wasn't a problem for that team last year. You know, like they obviously went through tough times. They lost games, but that you knew they were going to come out and play a tough game for the most part. Like first half of last night's game versus the Mavs, I mean, it was listless.
It was bad.
And you know, to be fair, a lot of that is schedule. You're on the road for that long. You come home playing the second night of a back-to-back, only your second home game in 16 days, which was also on the second night of a back-to-back.
17 days.
So, I mean, that is part of it. But that doesn't explain losing to the Kings the way they did. That doesn't explain losing as badly as they did to the Warriors. That super doesn't explain losing to the Nuggets after it looked like they were on the verge of maybe being okay
after the
Clipper game and the Thunder game. And for me, that's why I don't have any confidence in talking about where this team is at right now or what they may be building towards or even backsliding, because every time it looks like, you know, they look like they maybe have it figured out, they'll have a game like versus the Nuggets and, you know, be down by 20 in the first half. And, you know, it's just there is no telling what this team is going to do from one night to the next. And that's tough. You know, I think it's obviously, you know, tough for fans. It's super tough for coaches, and it's bad for the players.
I know that a lot of fans, probably 97% of them, are clamoring for some type of trade. They want to move.
Sure.
And I think I shouldn't speak for you. I assumed going into the year that there would be a trade, that Neil would make some trade based upon what the roster is, how it's constructed, the salary scale, everything going on. So I don't think that's a surprise, but you have to keep in mind that that's just not going to happen overnight.
No.
I mean, when do you ever see trades in January or December, whatever?
Very, very infrequently.
Right, so it's going to come to the trade deadline if and when they can make a deal. There are some things to keep in mind, though. Allen Crabbe, Mo Harkless, and Myers Leonard cannot be included in a trade until January 15th. First of all, that's one thing slowing you down. Some of the new players, including Evan Turner and Festus, could be included in trades last week on the 15th. So you're there for that. CJ McCollum, not that he's going to be included in a deal. I'm just breaking this down courtesy of my colleague Mike Richmond, who wrote about this last week.
Don't listen to that podcast, by the way.
What podcast?
Yeah, exactly.
CJ McCollum can't be traded until after January 27, 6 months after he signed his extension with the Blazers. Also of note is that Crabbe has a limited no-trade clause, and he can't, so he can veto any in-season deal this season because the Blazers match an offer sheet for him when he signed that with the Nets. So there are some limitations there, certainly, but that notwithstanding, what is out there for the Blazers?
Yeah,
I mean,
I don't know.
Is the magic trade that everybody keeps pawning for and fawning for? It's like, it's much easier when you're playing in a fantasy football league to go, oh, I need a receiver, I'm going to trade these, blah, blah, blah. You know, this is real life. And I don't see a solution just out there to solve what ails the Blazers.
Well, and a couple of things there. One, again, and I really don't mean to harp on this, but they're so bad defensively that it's hard to think of, like, well, if you add this one guy, then they're going to be better defensively. You know, I think obviously having someone in the paint, having a rim protector would definitely help. That's why they went and got Festus Ezeli, though obviously he hasn't been able to play. So, I mean, that's an admission right there that, like, that's one thing that we probably need to address. So if there is someone available in that regard, I guess you can at least look to that skill set that you don't have right now and say, we could get that. I don't know if that necessarily fixes your issues. Because if they were okay defensively last year, they weren't good, but they were okay. With basically the same team back this year, why can't they be okay again? So at that point, it makes you question whether or not it is scheme and personnel or whether it's something else, i.e. chemistry / locker room dynamics / what have you.
I don't know. Throw out your theory.
Yeah, exactly. So in that regard, it's a little difficult to figure. I mean, I'm guessing that the Blazers front office has an idea of what they think the issue is and how they might go about addressing it. I mean, maybe they do. I don't know.
Yeah.
They are smarter than me, so I would imagine that they're at least better off in figuring that out. But the idea that you know there's a deal out there that's going to fix this thing is, I don't know. And the other thing I would mention too is that, again, if you continue on this way for much longer, I think you have to start considering what are you making the trade for. So in theory, Blazers continue to struggle as they are now. It's decided, hey, we need to make a move. Is that move to we need to make a move so we can get better so we can get in the playoffs? Or is that we're not very good, we need to make a move to shed salary so we can start looking towards the future? So,
and that's, I wouldn't say impossible with this team, but that is very difficult with this team because of the salaries they signed this year, because of how things are laid out. I mean, you've got some deals that are not looking good right now. I mean, in the summer, everybody questioned the deal for Evan Turner. They questioned the deal for Alan Crabb. Those are looking like arguably the two worst contracts handed out this summer. That's $145 million for two players who are underperforming dramatically. Although Evan had started to play a lot better before he hurt his ankle.
Yeah, I think both those guys are playing okay.
They're playing better now, but yeah.
Are you getting the value, I guess?
Right.
That's the question.
And again, I still maintain if you're playing and you're doing well or at least filling your expectations, it doesn't matter how much the players are making by commiserate to their production.
Uh-huh.
But when your team is underperforming and they're teetering towards a free fall, then it does matter because that impacts your ability to make trades and everything we're talking about. So, you know, there are some valuable commodities on this team. I get random questions about who can you even trade. I mean, Mo Harkless, his contract's been a steal, I think, at this point.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think Myers Leonard is... He's not had a very good season at all, and the things that he does well, he's not doing well, and he's clearly mentally struggling with inconsistent playing time and his
play.
Struggles,
yeah,
and inconsistent play. But his package and his his talent package of talent and everything that he brings is a valuable commodity, I think, to teams. His shooting and size,
and when you're making $10 million a year, and the cap is over $100 million. I mean, that's less than 10%.
It's almost a mid-level contract,
yeah.
Really. So those are, but the problem is you don't want to trade Mo because he's been so valuable to your.
Yeah, the guys you could trade right now, I think, are the guys you want on your team.
Yeah,
you know, like they're the guys that are on good contracts that are decent players.
Yeah.
So. You know, I don't know. Again, I don't know if that solves your problem if your goal is to improve on the court. And I guess that's for me. It's if you talk about the eight spot and how, you know, it's there and there's I mean, I think as of right now, if you're the Blazers, you don't necessarily feel good about your hold on it. But say they kind of get things moving generally in the right direction, kind of get back on track to where they were earlier in this season, not playing great basketball, but, you know, 500 basketball. Is making the eighth spot worth it? You know, like, and I think that's it's still a bit too early to start kind of asking those questions. But I think when you're kind of considering more drastic measures, I think those are
the
conversations. Yeah, exactly. It's do you make moves to make the playoffs this year? I mean, did things last year really change kind of the way you're going to address your team's future going forward? And I mean, I think, you know, with what they did in free agency this year, I think you could say yes, in some respects it did. But if the proof is not there in the next season, then I think you need to get to the larger question, which is the question that I have that I don't have an answer to right now, which is really, is this, and I think you kind of touched on, Joe, was the team last year, is that the real Portland Trail Blazers, or is this the real Portland Trail Blazers?
Right.
And the team last year was just kind of an anomaly.
Fun 2-month ride.
Yeah.
Yeah. To be determined. Let's get to a couple true and falses, and then we've got a lot of questions from the listeners, so we'll get to those. First, true or false, Casey, the Blazers are 3-8 in December. They have 4 games left. The Spurs twice, once on the home, once on the road. Sacramento Kings at home and the Toronto Raptors at home. Will they they will finish with 5 wins this month.
Ooh,
true
man.
Or false? That means they need to win 2 of their final four games.
False.
Oh, so you think they're going to win 7 games? You're taking the under on that?
I'm taking the under. Yeah. I mean, San Antonio, I mean, you've got to assume that playing the way they're playing right now, that they're definitely not going to win either one of those games. Toronto is another really good team. And then you got the Kings at home, which, I mean, that's the only one of those games where if I was going to pick it right now, I would pick a win. And even then, I wouldn't feel super great about it. So.
I think if we flash back to before you left for the Bay Area Denver and then the Bay Area last week, after they played well against the Clippers and lost and then beat the Thunder, you look at this schedule and you're like, 2-2 would be good.
Yeah.
Now you're like, they could lose all four.
Yeah,
you're looking at a one win. So I'm taking the false. They're not going to get five.
Yeah,
wins.
And especially, I mean, and just to, boy, I mean, so they've lost four straight and 8 of 9, 9 of 10, 11. Boy, I mean that gets you. If depending on how they end the month, they might be looking at a streak or close to a streak that's as bad as how they finished the. Not last year, but the year before that, Damian's rookie season. I guess not even the year before that, but when they finished on that 13-game losing streak. I mean, they are nearing that level right now.
Going back to the whole what gives you pause and probably what the Blazers are holding out hope for is they were 11 and 20 last year at the end of January, and so they were 9 games under .500, and look what they did. So they're 5 games under .500 now, so... They're not. They'll probably be better now than they were last year, record-wise. Because, well, I guess if they lose, let's assume they win one game.
Okay,
they'll be 4. So that'll be 4-11 in December, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So if they won one game,
that'd be 14-21.
14-21. Yeah.
Is that right?
That's
14-21. Yeah. So that's 7 games under .500. So still better than last year.
Is it still better than last year?
11 and 20.
Yeah. At the end of December, they were 14-21.
Last year?
Last year. Yeah.
So that's almost exactly the same.
Which again, I mean, I think the optimistic view is that yes, they're not as bad as they were last year. The pessimistic view is that they at least look like they were improving last year, and as of right now. You can't say that. I mean, you just can't.
Okay, next up, the NBA changed the way it will do its All-Star voting results for its starters in the All-Star game. They've switched it an entirely a fan vote to 50% for the fans, 25% for the players, which I find interesting, and 25% for the media, which I hate. Generally speaking, this helps the Blazers during good times. Is that true or false? Generally speaking, in your normal year, this helps the Blazers. Keep in mind that historically the Blazers never get any players voted into the All-Star game because we're tucked away in the Northwest. And,
correct. True. I think that yes, if the Blazers were playing good basketball, if they were the team that a lot of people hoped that they were going to be this season, say they're fighting for that fourth spot in the West, yeah, that would absolutely help. One of the Blazers, i.e. probably Damian or CJ, get a starting spot. I mean, I say Damian and CJ because they're the most likely ones. Not because I think it would happen. But yeah, no, I mean, the logistics of it, fan votes are always going to benefit the huge superstar players, mm-hmm. Players that play in large markets, and players who have large overseas fan bases. So, who was it last year? Wasn't it? Zaza Pachulia almost made the starting lineup last year. I mean,
yes, he did.
He was pretty good last year too. I won't want to take away anything from Zaza, but not starting All-Star game good. So, and that was because there was some big push, I think, in his native Georgia.
I was gonna say, is he Georgian?
I think so. To get him in there. So yeah, I think that helps because I think that obviously you start to talk about a smaller voting base between media and players, and I think that. Those groups are less bound by, the where they're at and are more likely to vote for the players they think deserve it rather than the players they're fans of. I say that even though knowing that players are not actually that much different than fans in general. I mean, like, they worship the big name players as well. Like, they grew up obviously being huge basketball fans, so they're fans too, So, like, I don't know if their voting dynamics will be all that much different than the general public's voting dynamics. I know the media's will.
I think that they'll be more inclined to vote with their head rather than their heart, whereas a fan votes for their favorite players.
Well, so they had that players award thing or whatever, and it's, I mean, they're the same.
Same guys
and, like, the same general notions of, well, this guy scores a lot of points, so... He's good, and, this guy's on a team that won a lot of games, so he's good,
Well, it's like this is an example that leads me to believe that it will be at least more reputable is when I do my all-league voting and my end-of-the-year voting for random things, I like to ask the players and coaches for their input, particularly when it comes to all defensive teams.
Sure.
Because I'm not, you know, defense is such a hard thing to judge and to, you know, it's like Hassan Whiteside. Is he really a good defender because he blocks a lot of shots? You know, he takes a lot of risks by blocking all those shots and gets a lot of backdoor stuff. Anyway, so, you know, I asked Terry Stotts, I'm debating between these three guys, who do you think is the best defender? He watches thousands of hours of film every year. He studies these guys. He would have a better understanding probably than I would. I at least want to get their input. Similarly with Dame, I asked him who he thought was, you know, the best backcourt defender. A guy that most, I would not say most, but many casual NBA fans have never heard of, Avery Bradley, is who Dame respects the most defensively. And so I take that into account. So I think at some level the players will take that into account when they vote for such things.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. But
there will be some friend voting and stuff like that, too.
Well, because again, it's like,
or hate voting,
who's
too.
Who's the leadership of the union? You know, it's not the mid-level guys, it's the superstars.
Right.
You know, which is weird to me because, in theory,
it didn't used to be that way.
No, well, and they've changed it. Well, I won't say they changed it because, you know, it's they vote for it, but they've been more adamant about getting the bigger players in there, and I think that's kind of for a...
appearances. Sake.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and not that those guys don't know what they were talking about, but they do, because they do, but it's like, you know, if I'm voting for someone, I want someone who's going to have, you know, what my interests are at heart.
Sure, sure.
And, you know, those top 5% or guys in the NBA, I mean, they can do whatever they want. They're always going to get whatever they ask for.
The thinking with that, I think, is LeBron James walks into a room, he carries more clout than Derek Fisher, who is the former... But, you know, you've got guys like James Jones on that stuff who's been around forever and knows the league so well and comes from that mid-level player perspective. Yeah. That's who you want fighting for you. But
my overarching point being that they engage in the same hero worship that fans do, you know, to a certain extent.
Okay, last true or false. The Blazers will hold a players-only meeting within the next month.
The old players-only meeting.
True or false?
Solves nothing. I will say false, because I think players spend a lot of time with each other anyways, and I'm pretty sure that they have players only meals all the time. Like, I think, like, after shoot-arounds, like, they'll have meals for the players, and I think they're specifically, like, not even the coaches are supposed to go to them. I think it's just for the players. So if they had stuff they needed to hash out,
that'd be the time.
They could find time to do it.
But Casey, emotions are most raw and most heightened and most sensitive in moments after games when the loss is fresh and the pain is real. So,
but that doesn't help though. That's the thing. And I think in those situations is where having any kind of meeting makes no sense whatsoever. Like, it doesn't do anything for you. Like, and I know that, like, Terry has talked about, he doesn't necessarily like to address players after a game because that exact reason. It's like, emotions are high, things are raw, you're pissed off, like, you're not going to be receptive necessarily to any kind of message. And even if you are in that moment, who knows if you really even remember it, you know, once you kind of cool down. So, yeah, I will say false, only because I think they're probably already doing those things anyways. I just don't think those things matter. I mean, Stan Van Gundy, like, that's stupid. No, that doesn't mean anything.
Well, we agree on all three, because I don't think it's going to happen either. Yeah. This isn't really that kind of a team. I mean, you know, there's the moment earlier this season when Mo Harkless said something after a loss at the Suns. I think guys say things from time to time, and they have a... Yeah. This isn't like – it's not the makeup of teams in the past, where LaMarcus didn't really talk to anyone, like, at that depth. And so you didn't know where that sort of thing stood, where you had, you know, Mo Williams, who was an emotional roller coaster spouting off stuff, and obviously Wes and his – so there's been times in the past where the makeup of the team facilitated such a moment. I don't necessarily see that happening. Maybe it's because I hope it doesn't happen so I don't have to write about it, but I'm going false on that as well. Okay, on to the questions. Again, we will solicit questions on Twitter. You can follow us at Blazer Freeman and at Seahold for the chance to ask questions to the pod. First up, from Arvidas Sabronis, what would Chris Kaman be saying right now?
Yeah, I was thinking about Kaman the other day, actually, so I'm glad we got this question. You know, I don't know what he would be saying, but he would definitely be saying something. And I'm to the point too where I'm looking for any differences from last year to try to explain what's going on this year. And Chris Kamen is one of them. You know, obviously he wasn't really playing a whole lot, but a definite presence in the locker room, definitely a guy people listen to. I don't know that they would be playing better defense if Chris Kamen was on this team right now. But again, like I'm to the point at least where like there's nothing that I can just say, well, no, that's not it. That's not the difference from last year.
Could be anything.
It could be anything. And I think at this point you have to take everything into account. Like you can't just say, well, that doesn't make a whole lot of sense. So that's probably not it. When you've tried as much as they have, and when it's been as persistent as it has been, I think you got to start to look for any differences from last year. And so, yeah, what would Chris Kamen say? He'd say we're really bad defensively right now. It doesn't seem like we have a whole lot of, at least in the last couple games, a whole lot of heart in that regard.
I think he'd say, shut the hell up and get out of my face and stop talking to me.
Yeah, yeah. He would
denigrate.
Yeah, he definitely would have had some things to say after the Sacramento game as well, both in terms of what happened on the court and just the way that guys talked about it afterwards, I think.
Speaking of Sacramento, Dan Hoppen, H-O-P-P-E-N, sorry, Dan, can you break down the history of the Boogie Myers beef?
Well, I mean, to not get too into it, I would say that, you know, for the past couple seasons, they've used Myers on Cousins because Myers is a bigger player and is able to at least match up with Cousins. And he's had some success in slowing him down. Well, or at least Cousins has had some okay to poor games against Myers. And I don't know that you can necessarily just give that all to Myers. But at least has, you know, as much as any other guy on the team, the Blazers don't really have any kind of big bruising centers that can match up with him. And while Myers isn't big and bruising, he's at least big. And so, you know, throughout the years, and I remember one game in particular last year, it was at the Rose Garden. You know, they did a pretty good job of stopping Cousins. And I feel like I remember Cousins saying something to the effect that he felt they were being too physical with him, or that they were just gooning on him or something like that, which, I mean, is a crazy thing for that guy to say of all people. So that's kind of, I think, the root of it. And I did notice that in pregame, a couple people from Sacramento asked about Myers guarding Cousins. So I think that might have been kind of a Sacramento media construction that, like, ooh, they're sending Myers. I mean, they did start the game with Myers starting, so I mean that.
Well,
they use him.
There's been some games in the past where Myers has had good defensive moments against DeMarcus, or depending upon your perspective, DeMarcus has had poor offensive games
against
Myers,
yeah,
which is what he would say. But it really came to a head in January last year when Myers played 25 minutes in a win over Sacramento, a big win, like a 15-20-point win, and Cousins was like 4-for-21 from the field. I think it was at the Moda Center. And, you know, the media, wrote about that, from gave Myers props for playing good defense against him, and he had had it was a substantial performance in Myers' season, too. And I remember somebody asking Cousins about him, and he's like, I don't know who you're talking about. You know, it was that kind of a thing. And so, you know, I think that's part of the genesis of it all. And when you're a guy who can score 55,
yeah,
and a guy who is, has he been an all-star? He's been,
yes,
an all-star,
he was
right?
An all-star last year.
When you're an all-star and regarded as talent-wise, I caution this with talent-wise, one of the best players in the league, you look at a guy like Myers who hasn't really done much at all in his career, and you're like, really? This is a guy?
Sure.
So I think, and that's a perfect rivalry for DeMarcus Cousins, who in many ways is I'm not going to say an idiot, but is an idiot.
No,
at least his
antics. I wouldn't say that. But he's definitely the kind of guy who would have a rivalry with a guy like Myers.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And
I mean, and
we've talked about this before. There are many NBA players who can't stand Myers Leonard for reasons that we've dissected before. And so that's the beef, is it's all constructed in NBA players' heads a lot. But we as media members have written about it, too, in the past, so there you go.
And I don't know if it necessarily speaks to their rivalry, but the other part, too, is that, like, from the Blazers' perspective, granted, Cousins had a great game, and, I mean, you know, having a great game offensively against the Blazers right now is not exactly unique, but Cousins is obviously thinking a lot about Myers Leonard, You know,
yeah,
like,
right, right,
so
right.
If nothing else, like, you feel kind of good about that, you know, like the idea that this guy who is prone to flying off the handle is at least expending a lot of mental energy thinking about one of our kind of bit players.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
yeah, he was.
I think that's kind
of
a good thing in general. I mean, you play the Kings twice a year, and I mean, right now neither team is all that good, so who cares?
Well, four times a year you play the Kings.
Well, four times, yeah, exactly.
Well, or and you know, Cousins was giving it to Plumlee in that fourth quarter. He wasn't giving it to Leonard, but he was still taunting Leonard on the bench.
Well, and last year when Myers wasn't even playing, when he after he had his injury, he was on the bench in street clothes. And Cousins is cursing that in that game. So it's like, dog, you I mean, he's got some issue with Myers. And Myers, you know, for his part, before, you know, his post-game comments after the game on Monday night, always goes out of his way to compliment Cousins. Says he's, you know, the best big man in the league. He talks about how talented he is and this and that. So, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I guess everyone's got to have a foil.
It doesn't make sense. I will say this, leaving this subject on this note, mouthpiece gate and all that was not the reason the Blazers lost that game.
Of course.
So you can emotionally hang on to that and be mad about it, but that's not why they lost.
Well, I think you can be mad about the state of NBA officiating sometimes, wherein things like that are allowed to slide and things that are seemingly innocuous are not allowed to slide.
Like Mason's technical.
Like Mason's technical, for one.
Okay, next up from Ben Lumsden. Happy holidays. Hey, there we go. He went with happy holidays.
Hey.
Happy holidays, Ben. Can you speak to the mindset of the team? Do the players seem lost, hopeful? He just doesn't see any fight.
You know, I think they are. They're dejected right now. I've talked about this, that I feel like the Blazers throughout past couple seasons have been a very resilient group. There's a lot of times last year people were like, well, boy, they're losing, what's the mood in the locker room? And I was like, you know, they're all right. I'm starting to sense a bit of a change now. It's starting to get a bit more dour. I don't know, I don't have any reason to believe there's any infighting, but it's just the kind of like, yeah, we'll get them next time mentality is not really there right now, which it shouldn't be, because they're not getting them next time. So I think they're struggling on and off the court right now.
Yeah, Alan Crabb had a fairly not an appropriate quote, but he had a quote that spoke a lot to where their mindset is last night. He said, "At this point, we can't sit here and talk about things that we have to get better at. It's getting old. You guys keep asking the same questions, and we're getting the same results. So obviously it's something that we're going to have to change. We just have to stop talking about it and just do it." And that speaks to the point that we keep asking them the same questions because it's the same thing that is their problem. And so you can only talk about it so much. In their defense, we're asking them, so they're talking about it.
Yeah.
But for a team that is always supremely positive because of how positive their coach always is, you're inclined to be hopeful and say that we're going to figure this out. And we know we have talent, and they came into the season with all this confidence. But right now is a very critical point in the season because, as I said, like confidence and positivity and a good mindset, that is all very fragile in this league. And right now they're definitely floundering a bit, but I think they remain hopeful in part because of what they did last year and in part because they still believe in each other. But it's fragile. So right now, that mindset that you ask about, Ben, is fragile. And I guess that's how I would put it. I don't know if they're lost, but they're definitely searching to find that elusive feeling and magic that they had last year. I don't agree that I don't see any fight. I didn't see a lot of fight in the first half last game.
Yeah.
But I do see fight night to night. I don't think that they're mailing it in. They're just struggling and they can't figure out how to change it, and so I think that, again, it's fragile right now. I don't think it's, like you said, it's getting to the point where they're getting concerned. I think.
Absolutely. And I think, again, it's they're playing pretty bad right now, so there's definitely a feeling that, boy, we need to get this figured out right away, and I think that's fair, but I think you need to give it another month and see how this thing shakes out. I'm not saying they're losing because of the schedule, but if they just have if they're home, if they're able to kind of get some more practice time in, and just, I mean, I don't even know if practice is going to make a difference at this point, but just the notion that this is definitely the hardest part of their season and they're playing poorly, it's fair to judge them on where they're at now, but I don't know that I would make any large definitive statements until another month from now. Just like last year when it seemed like they might be teetering on the brink of not making the playoffs, and there were a lot of people that were like, that's it, they're not going to make it. I think the both of us were saying, you know, let's see how these kind of trips in March go before we say this is not going to happen for them, and they end up getting it right. So, and again, I'm not saying that that's necessarily going to be the case this year, but I do think that there just needs to be a little more time. But you're right, Joe, in that you get to the end of December and you start to basically become who you are. Yeah. And that's, you know, I asked Mason that in Denver after that loss, you know, are you afraid that inconsistency is a trait of this team? He's like, oh yeah, no, we are inconsistent. That's what we are.
No question.
Like you can't say that that's not one of our kind of our affects. We are inconsistent.
Next up from Mike Dennis, when is Neil Olshey going to address the roster he put together? I guess it depends on what your definition of address is. If you mean that when is he going to go talk to the media about the roster he put together, that's not happening.
End of the season.
He doesn't talk to the media during the season or really ever at all. If you mean when is he going to address the roster, meaning when is he going to make a trade, we sort of outlined that earlier. There are some dates that he has to worry about, and I would expect if he's going to do anything for it to be around the trade deadline, which is February 23rd.
Well, and there's a third way you could take that as well, Joe, as in, is Neil Olshey going to address the team saying, what are you guys doing? In that regard, I don't believe he will. I believe that he believes that to Terry.
He does talk to the player. All general managers talk to the players throughout the season.
But as far as like Neil getting up in front of the locker room and being like, hey, guys, get this S straightened out, I think that they leave that to the actual coaching staff, as they probably should.
Stephen Reed with a very important question. Who will be better next year in college football, Oregon or Florida State?
Well, I don't know anything about Florida State, but I'm going to say Florida State.
That's the correct answer.
Just because I do like what Oregon is doing right now. I think Willie Taggart's doing a nice job. I love the Leavitt hiring, even though he's kind of a lunatic. I think
you want your defensive coordinator to be a little off the hinges.
I think that's what's been missing from Oregon is they didn't have any lunatics or any kind of fly off the handle kind of guys. So I like it. I think they're heading in the right direction. Royce Freeman coming back, I think, is huge. So I think Ducks are going to be all right next year, but we'll see.
I expect Florida State.
But I would still expect Florida State to be better.
I think they're going to be very good. We do open the season against the Alabama Crimson Tide, however. Could lose by 20, you know, and still. But
boy,
it's so
an
early
SEC team actually playing a team with a pulse and guys who weigh over 200 pounds in a preseason game. That's amazing.
Big time. Yeah.
I think Bama tries to.
They go out and schedule. Before the year. But you're right. Most of them don't. So I'm going to answer Florida State, Stephen. Thanks for the question. Next up from Blazer 24/7. What's your favorite Portland beer? Do you know your answer? I can talk mine through right now.
Do they make hams in Portland?
I don't know if they brew hams in Portland. I don't think so.
Probably not.
They sell it though.
Yeah.
I'm a big Breakside guy. I like Breakside's IPA. I like their Wanderlust. I like their Lunch Break ISA. Those are probably my three favorite there. I also recently have become a very big Great Notion fan. Mm. They're on Alberta. They took over the old Mash Tun spot there near Pine State Biscuits.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, great spot. They've got several beers that I really like. I'm spacing on their names right now. The Juicy Juice Box Junior, Juice Junior. I like those.
Juice Junior.
They have a lot of weird fruity beers that I'm not really into, but I really like their IPAs. Are very good. There's one that I'm forgetting that I really like too right now. Oh, I like what's the nonprofit by the Moda Center? The one just up the road there on
Ex
Novo.
Yeah,
I like Ex Novo.
See, I've had none of these things. I don't drink much beer anymore. I don't drink much, period, anymore, just because I don't. We get free beer every now and then at work because through sponsorship, and they gave me a case like a month and a half ago, and they were just today. They're like, "Oh, we have more free beer. You want some?" I was like, "I haven't even finished."
Why don't you take it and give it to me?
Actually, Joe, I believe there is a case of beer sitting outside that door for you.
I'll take it.
So. No, it's actually for you. Supposedly.
Oh, really?
I got a text saying
that. Hey!
Yeah. So
what did I do?
So whatever beer that is my favorite. Actually, let me open the door real quick.
Okay, you do that. I'll just sit here and talk. What I'll do is I'll ask the next question, and then Casey won't even know what the question is, so he won't be able to answer it.
Laurelwood Portlandia Pils. That's what I'll say then.
Laurelwood Portlandia Pils. There you go. Here we go.
That's right.
We have a very good. We had a lot of trade questions, and we'll address a couple of them right now. Let's do that. Marcus Stewart wants to know, Nikola Vucevic is my number one trade target for our Blazers. Al-Farouq Aminu and Noah Vonleh works financially. Who says no?
I'm just going to say,
I just raised my hand.
Joe's raising his hand.
That means I say no.
That Blazers' issue is defense, and I do not know that that idea improves you defensively.
Yeah, so. It doesn't. He's not a good defender, and you're losing perhaps your best defender in Aminu in that trade. So you don't need to add more offense. You need to add more defense. I would be thinking defense. I would love to see a rim-protecting center, or at least like a Robin Lopez lane-clogging center, because in my humble opinion, the Blazers' perimeter defense is so bad that guards are penetrating and then guys are coming to help, but you don't have a Robin Lopez in the middle to, you know, be that last
shut
wall of defense.
Yep.
And you look at the impact Robin Lopez made on that previous team. Now, granted, Wesley Matthews was a far better perimeter defender than CJ McCollum, so that helped a lot too. And for that matter, you know, I think Nicholas Batum was a pretty lanky, fair defender. But the Blazers forwards, I think, are good, versatile defenders that work well together. You just you need Festus Ezeli's, you know, if he were at any point able to come back, which we, you know, intimated that he will not most likely do that, that would be the kind of guy you want. So it's sad that he's just sitting there for all you guys
and
not able to
play. Yeah, that's unfortunate. I did see this, by the way, too. Someone, I can't even remember who had this on Twitter, but if you're listening to the podcast, it was a good tweet. Someone used a trade machine to basically, they're like, this is a great trade, and it was basically bringing back Nick Batum, Wesley Matthews, and Robin Lopez in exchange for other guys. And I was like, yeah, well, you know, that would probably solve some of the issues.
I don't know if you really want Wes right now, because he's not looking totally healthy, but
no.
You could sure use a Nicholas Batum right now, and a Robin Lopez for that matter. So there you go. Next trade question from Four Faces of Portland. What player would you trade Alan Crabb for? What player would you trade CJ McCollum for?
Yeah, I'm not doing that.
I asked the answer. I pose your question, Four Faces of Portland, because it is an impossible question to answer. I'll tell you who I would trade Alan Crabb for. LeBron James. Who would I trade CJ McCollum for? Let's see. Who
not LeBron James? Coming up with another name. Anthony
about,
Davis.
Kevin Durant.
Kevin Durant.
Kevin Durant. Oh, yeah, sure. Let's go with Anthony Davis.
Will Chamberlain.
Use some, well, no, I wouldn't trade
Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
Yeah, no.
Shaq.
No.
Hakeem.
No. Those guys aren't in the league anymore.
Dikembe Mutombo.
Yeah, no, he's not in the league either.
LeBron James' son.
Yes, I would trade for the future right now. point being, it's,
Moses
it's
Malone.
Hypotheticals like this are I don't want to say ridiculous because I don't want to belittle your question.
They're not ridiculous. Yeah. They're not. But it's just for people in our profession, they are hard to answer.
Impossible.
Because,
to
yeah,
answer.
Because and that's the other thing too is that like you can't just again if you're covering a team, just kind of throwing out trade ideas. It's just I won't say it's unprofessional, but it's just not. It's not really the way you should go about doing the job. I don't.
So anyway, I can answer a question like the Nikola Vucevic because I don't think the Blazers should trade for him. He certainly not shouldn't be their number one trade target. You know, a guy like DeMarcus Cousins, nonstop Blazers rumor.
I don't.
Why would you trade for that head case?
He's a very good player.
He's a talented player, but is he just going to bring more of the same up and down to this team? I mean. Maybe.
And I mean, if you saw how, I mean, the other thing about that game too, that unfortunately got lost. Mason Plumlee put up a career high in points in that game
True.
As well, and he had basically a nonstop layup line to the rim. So
is that
going to
solve your defense?
Again, and I'm not saying that's on one guy because it's absolutely not. But I mean, if you're talking about moves that are going to help you address your main issue, which issues 1 through 5 for the Blazers right now is defense. You know, those are kind of the guys I'd be looking at.
Speaking of defense, Cody Rowe wonders or wants us to please explain why the defense can't, won't, doesn't hedge and trap Morse on screen and rolls. It seems like other teams do. Quite simply, the Blazers play a conservative philosophy of defense, a scheme that was adopted that first year, Terry Stotts' second year, the first year they stunningly went to the playoffs and Damian hit the shot and got the second round, all that stuff, and they far exceeded expectations. They abandoned the trapping, you know, showing on pick and rolls to play a more conservative defense that that facilitates or encourages mid-range shots, and they try to limit points in the paint and three-pointers. That worked when you had a guy like Robin Lopez in the interior and you had guys like Wes and Nick on the perimeter. But I agree with you, Cody. Scheme-wise, it probably makes more sense to do some more athletic, more gambling defensive schemes with the talent you have and the personnel you have. I think that perhaps the Blazers would have thought about doing that more if over the final 2 years last year, which we've talked about, they didn't improve so much defensively because it seemed like they had either adapted to or figured out or grown to excel in that defensive philosophy, and so it seemed to suit them. But, however, it seems at this point like it does not, and it makes more sense to gamble more for steals and play the lanes and show and do more switching on screens and rolls and trapping and all that stuff. So I think that's about as thorough as I can answer
yeah,
that question.
No, I think you did a nice job there, Joe.
Okay, next up, Blazer Tim wants to know, how hard is it to be in the locker room after games like Dallas when you know there's going to be a lot of PO'd guys?
No, actually, it's not. I won't even say you don't get as good as stuff, because sometimes when you lose badly and guys are pissed off, like, you do get some good kind of honest, raw opinion. But no, I mean, the difference is that even when this team is playing poorly, there's still a good collection of people. And typically, you know, guys are going to lose their tempers from time to time, but when you're a decent person at heart, like, you know, it's a business. You know, that, I mean, the guys who understand and get that this is the job, which I think, you know, basically Portland's locker room is like that.
It's a great locker room.
You know, you don't have to worry necessarily about asking about tough things. You know, and I'll see from time to time questions will be asked, and it won't ever be the guy who's getting asked the question, but like, if you look into the periphery and see his teammates who heard the question, like, you'll see eye rolling and like, you know, and like, this effing guy here, and so on and so forth. But no, it's really not that much. I mean, it's, you don't get as good a stuff, I think, and it just, and right now the issue is that, and we were talking about this last night, and we've talked about this for a bit. What's hard with covering this team right now is that they have the same persistent issue, and it shades everything on the team. And at a certain point, it's, how do you write about it again? You know, yeah. how do you say they're bad defensively again in a different way? And
yeah,
that's what's hard.
That's what I was going to say, Casey, is that the emotion, the win, loss, all that stuff, it's irrelevant. Well, not irrelevant, but it's meaningless to me because I know I have to go in there regardless. In some respects, it can be easier to write about a bad loss or about an emotional loss or something like that because, as Casey said, you get the raw emotion. It's just from a different perspective rather than, you know, a team that wins. The hardest part is when a team loses consistently the same exact way for games, days, and weeks at a time, because then it's like, how do I continue to tell the same story in a different way? So that's, I think, more difficult than anything. You know, both of us have covered losing teams, we've covered winning teams. No matter if they win or lose, there's different challenges for either or. And myself, as someone who doesn't have a rooting interest in the team, the only thing that makes a win easier is that maybe they're nicer. They're in a better mood after the game. So other than that, it's pretty much irrelevant. On a similar note, Brandon Goldner asks if our jobs as reporters are any tougher when the team is underperforming below expectations. Are the players hard to access? Depends on the player, whether or not they duck media. Some guys do after games. Access has already been limited quite a bit over the years since I first started, so that's just a natural trend that we're battling. But I don't think they're any more difficult to cover as reporters for the reasons that we mentioned in the previous answer.
No. The one thing I – for me, the only thing that's difficult when they're – well, not the only thing, but one of the things difficult for me. So, like, off-court stuff is stuff that I'm very interested in, the players do, and fans are very interested in it as well. It can be hard to do stories and – so on and so forth about those kind of things when the team is playing as poorly as they are.
Actually, that's a good point, because there is a story I want to do on Alan Crabb that it's like, if I wrote that, they would be like, are you really?
Yeah.
I wanted to write
about Terry Stotts wearing slippers on the bench, but they're losing games. So it's like, you can't write that story then.
Exactly.
So like, those are the hard things, is like to have the opportunity to get something out when it makes sense.
Yeah.
And when you're playing really poorly, it basically never makes sense.
Because all you guys want us to write about is defense. And all you want us to write about is what's going wrong with the team and dissect why. And so it makes sense from that perspective, too. And I get it.
Not exactly. You're not saying that's you're wrong. It's just the reality.
Yeah. Okay. Next up from Jared Cowley. Is it effective leadership for Dame to call out teammates for defense when he's perhaps the team's worst defender? Well, I don't think that Dame has called out his teammates for defense, Jared. And as a matter of fact, I think he's gone out of his way, not just now, but over the years, to be very politically correct when dissecting the team's issues at various points. He puts a lot on himself in interviews and talks a lot about the team when he's asked about it. But I don't think he's thrown any teammate under the bus. I don't think he's called out any teammate. I think he's called himself out as much as any other aspect of the Blazers' play. When I asked him what was most frustrating about last night's game, he said three things, and one of them was the fact that he had two chances to give the team a win in the final 20 seconds and didn't do it.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that's him taking ownership, and I don't know. I know the point that you're making. I just don't think that it's what's gone on. I don't think he's called out teammates.
Yeah, and I always have – you know, Chris Haynes wrote that story you know, with quotes from Damian where he was – I can't remember exactly what the quotes were, but people read it and they're like, oh, he's calling guys out. It's like, no, that's the way Damian talks all the time. Mm-hmm. Like, really, that's – when I read that, I was like, that's kind of the way he talks. And while he might have used a bit more profanity than typically you're used to hearing or reading in a story, I mean, like, that's what it is, you know? And again, like, I don't consider those call-outs at all. Like – he's saying we're not playing well right now. His quote in Houston, we kind of suck right now.
Yeah.
Is that a call out? To me, it's not. That's an honest
speaking
admission of
truth,
where you're at. Yeah, that's and so you know if a guy's getting up and saying yeah, you know, Al-Farouq Aminu is a wuss for not getting out there and playing, that's a call out.
Yeah.
Or you know, Myers Leonard is consistently missing assignments left and right. That's a call out. Saying we're not very good right now, we need to get our S together because I'm not seeing any heart or any determination out there. That's just an honest assessment of what is happening right now. And I think a good thing, you know, like he's the team leader. Like if someone's going to say anything like that, it's going to have to be him.
Yeah. I didn't think put two and two together that Jared could have been talking about that story you referred to, because I didn't read it. And my understanding is that story was blown out of proportion
I don't know if I'd say blown out of proportion or taken out of context.
My understanding was that Dame even said it was nothing to write, like nothing to write about.
I guess that was my take as well. Like, I wouldn't say it was nothing to write about because I think there were good quotes and I think it was interesting, but it wasn't any different than the things he's been saying or kind of the notions that he's been trying
the tone,
to get across.
Yeah,
exactly. I mean, it's like Terry last night. Like, was Terry calling out the team by saying that they weren't playing with heart and effort, or was he stating what happened?
I think that was a little bit of both.
And as soon as I said that, I was like, no,
that might not be your best
was,
example.
But only
for
because
him,
Terry,
yeah.
Exactly. And that's because of the way that Terry usually talks about the team, which is that he's typically very careful to kind of keep things
positive
in-house and positive. And he even mentioned that, I think, when he was asked about Damian's comments, he's like, well, generally, you know, team stuff I like to keep within the team, but I had no problem at all with what he said. You know, again, and it's not calling it a call out is it's like that's it's the loaded terminology when all it really is
talking
in some respects, stating the obvious.
Next up from Chris Takita. What's worse, food poisoning or our defense?
Ooh. Well, the food poisoning that I had in San Francisco went away after a couple days, so I would say I would much rather have food poisoning, because at least it, you know, that at some point in time, not too long away, it's going to end.
But when you have food poisoning or the flu or something, you feel like you're going to die. Like, you literally feel like you at least want to die. In fact, yeah, you feel like you're going to die, and that sounds better than life. Whereas, and that's life and death, Casey. Whereas the NBA and the Blazers, that's not life and death, man. That's just a game.
Sure.
I mean, that's just, it's a passion, but, you know, nobody's getting sick over it. At least they shouldn't be. You guys shouldn't be getting sick over it. So I'm going to say that food poisoning is worse.
Well, I mean, Rudy Tomjanovich almost died from getting punched in the face in a basketball game one time.
True, true.
By Kermit Washington.
That's very true.
Chris Bosh has that heart issue. If he played, he could feasibly die. Nick Batum's dad died shooting free throws.
All very true. But
come on, Joe. It is life and death.
Well, I mean, if you're looking at the grand, like, what's worse, and, like, you know, 2 days.
Well, yeah, I mean, if you're talking, I mean, but you're talking about the difference between, like, food poisoning and, like, getting diphtheria or, you know, cholera. I mean, like, yeah, if you're going to ask me which one is worse, you know, dying on the Oregon Trail or
the Blazers defense.
Or the Blazers defense, yeah, I'll say, you know, death. But, you know, I was sick for a couple of days, and while it was lame, you know, I got over it. I hadn't vomited in, I could, at least a decade, and I kind of forgot what it felt like. I didn't enjoy it, but it wasn't that bad. I don't know.
You know, like, you jinxed, like, yourself when you were boasting about how long it had been.
I've been boasting for years, though, so, like, I claim no jinx effect there, because I've been telling people for years and years and years that I haven't thrown up, and it only got me in San Francisco. And I don't know if it was food poisoning. I don't know if I caught a bug from somebody else. All I know is that the one off day we had that I was going to spend with my wife, who was kind enough to fly out to San Francisco to join me on that trip since we were there for a couple days, was totally scuttled because I couldn't move.
And on that note, we will move away from this podcast. We've been talking to you guys for an hour and 14 minutes. Approaching 1:15.
You're assuming that I'm not going to cut it down, Joe. I'm going to edit the heck out of this thing. I'm going to take all your good parts out, put in my good parts, and
you know, we don't ever really edit the podcast.
No,
it's a little known.
I mean, I make, you know, I do the ends
and the beginnings.
And
yeah.
Besides that,
I mean, unless we have someone, which actually, I would say, more frequently than we would like, someone bursts in on during our recording into the thing, and we get sidetracked. I think that's happened twice.
We've cut that out once or twice. Yeah, exactly.
But usually we just roll through that too and just keep going.
This is that pure uncut.
Yep. So anyway, thanks for listening as always. Hang in there. It's either going to get better or it won't, but you're still going to be alive. And you're,
what do you mean it won't, Joe? You're just staring at me like, this is it? It's done?
No, I mean the Blazers.
Well, I know. That's what I, yeah.
I'm saying it's either going to get better or it won't, and there's nothing you can do about it. Just enjoy
it's
the ride.
It's going to get better or it won't. I thought you said it could get better, it won't.
No.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
Misunderstanding.
Let me be more clear.
So you at least have to be open to the idea that it's going to get better, Joe.
Hang in there, guys. It's either going to get better or it will not get better, and either way, you're going to be along for the ride, living and enjoying/hating it. Happy holidays, Merry Christmas, all that other stuff we talked about earlier. Be safe and have fun. We'll talk to you next time. Keep smashing the baseline. Go left, go right, 360 degrees. Here comes a paint, Kobe. Hippin' and he's hopping a three. Try and catch him coming down the court. Bonzi Wells, what a handle. It's amazing what he do for the sport. Damon Stoudemire saves the day, a.k.a. Mighty Mouse. Gonna show all of you scrubs how to play. What a show. Why the Lakers even want it with us, you know? No one's ready to deal with us.